This episode of the Android Central Podcast is brought to you by ShopAndroid.com. Save 10% on your entire order by using the coupon code AC10 at checkout.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 208 for Friday, October 24th, 2014. How it is? I'm home. I've been home, but I've been off an airplane for all of, I think today's day five without an airplane. Go me! Woohoo! It's going to end in like 3 days. Phil Dickinson, what's up? Got Jerry Hildenbrand with us.
What's happening, people?
Alex Dobie in England.
Hey, hey.
Andrew Martinick in Seattle.
Good afternoon.
If I start yelling, will you guys tell me? Because I have these different headphones in today, and they have not like noise canceling, but they have the big fat like earplug type thing, so I really can't hear anything going on out here.
If you ever stop yelling, we'll mention it.
I mean, the only voice I hear inside my head now is mine, and I guess that's an improvement, but it's all very ugh. You're just going to let that hang out there?
Thinking.
Family put us on the spot like this, Phil.
What's that?
So don't put us on the spot like this. We have to take time to come up with these things.
So, where'd it go? I got TV in the office here preparing for the Nexus Player stuff, and I can't find the cable to my Nexus Q. I have to go find another mini. Was it mini, micro, HDMI, whatever?
I'm going to take pictures of mine with Nexus printed on the end of it and just mail them to you.
I'm afraid I threw mine away. It might be at home. I'll have to look this weekend.
If you threw it away, you don't deserve to get another.
Because I was cleaning.
It's going to reject whatever cheap Amazon Basics HDMI cable you try to plug in.
I was thinking of just buying one. Mine just sits there. If I can ever get it to work, it's just going to be hidden in an entertainment center. I was thinking of sending you mine with Nexus printed on the end. But now that you tell me, you probably threw it away. I'm having second thoughts.
I was cleaning my office. I mean, I cleaned part of my office. Doesn't really look like it still. So it's been kind of one hell of a week since we last met. Where do you guys want to start? Should we start with the updated Lollipop preview? Because you guys, it was funny. I essentially took the weekend off last weekend to hang out with my wife at her 20th college reunion at Northwestern. Had a lot of fun. But it was fun watching you guys just gabbing all weekend about the cool stuff you were seeing in there.
It's a little bit more cool stuff, but to me the best part is now a lot more of the cool stuff actually works. It's a much better experience than the last developer preview.
It's basically daily driver ready from the OS level, isn't it? The Google apps aren't quite ready yet, which we already knew, but the OS pretty much works. It's pretty much what it's going to be when we get it on the Nexus 6 and the Nexus 9 in a couple weeks.
Some things are still a little wonky. NFC in particular we ran across is a little flaky.
The priority notifications are still messed up.
Yeah, that was the thing. Because I was trying to play catch up, and then I got to a point where I wasn't quite sure about something I needed to test, and Jared's like, yeah, you ran into that wall that we hit like 4 days ago.
Yeah, I woke up the first day after I put it on the Nexus 7, and my Nexus 7 sits on my bedside table, it just randomly turned off the silence all notifications at 5 in the morning and just went to full volume and started blooping and beeping and filling up with Hangout chats from
Alex
and Richard. So the interesting thing is the system's all set up and it's ready to take notifications properly, but you know, there's just that little last 5% of executions not there, at least in the Nexus 7 preview.
Here's my question, and I asked Jerry this a couple days ago. I still think, and I've used all sorts of do not disturb modes at this point, I don't know how I went so long without it. I really don't, because I remember phones beeping from the other side of the house and I would wake up. I remember them beeping next to my head and I would wake up. Now it's to the point where I just don't want anything lighting up at all, let alone making noise. I still think Motorola has one of the best straight do not disturb implementations. And in fact, I mean, it's on by default, right? I think it's from like 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. or 7 a.m.
Yeah, if you tell it that you want it to do not disturb, it's already set up for normal sleeping hours.
Right, and I adjusted a little bit. HTC's is different. You have to turn it on, but even then, you know, if you hit the volume button, it says, oh, hey, do you want to turn Do Not Disturb off? And I say yes, because I'm awake. It shuts it off completely. It kills the scheduling. And, I mean, what good is that? Right? Motorola has the little drop-down that, you know, just says, hey, I'm awake. And you tap it, and it knows you're awake.
And Samsung does it weird with the blocking mode. You have to turn blocking mode on 100% of the time and then set a schedule. So you permanently have the blocking mode notification, even though it's not enforced, you know, until you know, 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. or whatever you set it. And then at the same time, it doesn't mute like media volume and keyboard volume and things like that. So you can have it on blocking mode, and you're like, oh, okay, cool. And then you accidentally open a YouTube video and it starts blasting music.
And it's still a horrible name. Like, that's not even English.
It's not right.
No, before we rag on it, Samsung's is the most powerful and actually will do the most things. And it's the one I would like to see. But Phil's right. Motorola is the easiest setup. But then again, maybe I want different times for Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, on Thursday, that's my day off. Maybe I don't want it to fire up in the morning. I can do that with Samsung. With Motorola's, you can't. It's pretty much an all or nothing thing. So there are pros and cons to all the different methods. And some third party apps do it really, really well too.
That's what I've had to use for the last, you know, couple generations on the Nexus 4 and Nexus 5. I have to use a third party app that just brute forces it and shuts off all the sounds at a specific time interval.
And that's pretty much what Sony has, because they sort of have something that is tied into the time and also whether it's on a charger, whether there's stuff plugged in.
Yeah.
But you can only mute the sound part of it. I don't think you can kill notifications completely. You certainly can't turn the LED off. So you can't quite get the, you know, completely
No.
The LED on Sony phones.
You can kill the LED, or at least you can on this.
Oh, really? Okay.
Z3, what do we call it? Z3 VED?
I hear angels singing hallelujah if you can shut that LED off.
Yeah, so is the other ones, is it up here in the speaker grill? Because that's where it is.
It is on the Z2, I think, and maybe the Z1.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Yeah, there it is, notification light. So I turned it off because it woke me up the first night. And it's a really cool notification light, but again, it's like, no, just stop, turn off, I want to sleep.
They kind of fixed it in the proper Z3 by just having a smaller LED.
This is not a proper Z3.
You can't go like cave spelunking with that green LED. On the Z3, it's not.
You have to take your regular spelunking equipment. Yeah, you can't rely on your phone.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the Z3 that I have in a minute. But yeah, so I'm real curious to see what Motorola does with the notifications and because even Lollipop, like, it's not a true Do Not Disturb mode. It's just kind of built into the way the notifications work, and it's not a bad implementation at all. It's just different.
Which may be the best way once they get it tweaked.
Maybe.
You know, building it into the notifications might turn out to be pretty doggone awesome.
Much better than how all these different manufacturer implementations end up folding back into this when phones get updated with Lollipop, because a lot of different people have a lot of different ways of doing this, and our OEM is going to cut back on their own unique features to bring it in line with the way stock Android does it, or we're just going to see more of a continuation. It's going to be interesting to see.
I hope they don't. I want HTC and Samsung to keep doing what they're doing and tweak it and refine it and say, oh, Google has a really great idea there. Let's implement that into blocking mode and keep. I don't want clones of Nexus phones. I just don't want that.
There's a reason why I keep grabbing the Moto X, and that's one of them. And there are a couple other reasons I want to talk about some more in a minute when we talk about this Verizon phone that I have. But yeah, I completely agree. Like, and actually, that was something else I was thinking about this week, because everyone's asking, are you going to redesign your app? Are you going to get material design and blah, blah, blah? And absolutely. It's going to take longer than I want it to. I will be completely upfront about that. But yeah, I want us to redesign it, but I don't want it to just be like, I mean, we could go and take the code from the Google I.O. app, which I think was a really excellent app, and you could pretty much just port that over, right? But it's like, well, I mean, okay, but let's do something a little different. I don't want, like, every material design app to look exactly the same, is the point. Same thing.
Yeah, I mean, material design is a set of rules, not a template, right?
Right.
I just want blinking text.
I guess guidelines is probably a better word than rules.
Why do you want blinking text?
Because it's awesome.
Blinking text, Comic Sans, Jerry Design.
That's right. GeoCities, baby.
Or whatever that crazy font is that's default on some Samsung phones that's like Comic Sans.
Now, let's not go that far. Let's not go that far.
I'll be completely honest. There are times that people send us screenshots, and I just want to reply back, no, don't ever send me that again.
It's like my first writing sample from elementary school.
Now, but the other side of that is, isn't it awesome that they can use that font that we all hate and they
know? No, not no, okay.
They don't show it to us.
You're just old and jaded, just, you know, like I am, and you want it to look a certain way, but I think it's great that they can make their phone ugly as sin.
There are just so many good fonts in the world.
And that's not what I have no problem telling people. That's bad and you should feel bad. No, I'm not going to tell them that, even though I absolutely am thinking it really hard. Yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of as far as I've gotten in the lollipop world this week. What else have you guys been playing with?
So I have the here it is, the Gore, the G-Watch R. It's a big improvement from the last one from LG, I think. It's not going to change the way Android Wear works fundamentally. It's still pretty much the same old experience, similar to what you'd have on Moto 360. Obviously, you've got the full circle display now, so there's not a little bit chopped off the bottom. Hardware is very nice. It's not going to fit every taste. I mean, it is a big chunky watch. You can see better pictures of it in our review than me holding up to a webcam. But it's the version I have here is the black model. I think there was a sort of a silver one floating around. I'm not sure if they're ever releasing that. The current one is the black model. It is very kind of stealthy, a little bit sort of unassuming. But when you get it up close, it's you know, very much this big chunky thing. You can kind of confuse it with a regular analog watch, right? It has that look to it, but the feel is very different. It has almost, you know, the way that the 360 has a very lightweight feel to it, and it doesn't feel, it's just different to a normal watch. And the this is the same kind of thing going on with the G-Watch R. But the big thing with this is the screen. Screen is much better, very very bright, maybe a little bit too bright in the dark. And battery life as well, much, much improved.
I thought it was just a little soft. Andrew and I got to see it when we were in Las Vegas last month, whenever that was.
Did you say soft?
Yeah, I thought the colors were a little soft. It's not as vibrant as what I was used to with the 360.
And you wanted that curly font.
So you can, it's just okay to say I'm wrong, but
unlucky blue motor and do that.
And maybe that was a pre-production thing.
Maybe. I mean, I've this is me going from the original G Watch with its really horrible dull screen, and this. I mean, it's not, you know, it's no work of art, but the colors look decent. It's you know, comparable with what you get with a decent OLED display. Well, probably not up there with, you know, Note 4 level Super AMOLED, but it looks decent, I think.
Well, now that the review is over and we're going to talk about it, you know, I look at that watch and at the bottom I see square E, and it just makes me want to just strangle someone.
I mean, that's a stylistic thing, isn't it? I'm not a big fan of the minute marks anyway, but I mean, it is what it is. It's a callback to... go ahead, Phil.
It's not like other watches don't do that, Jerry, because I went and looked.
Wait. Other watches, the bezel turns, so the 30 is written correctly because it's at the top dead center.
Well, but if you don't turn it, then it's not.
But with a turning bezel, or with a stationary bezel, why would you print it backwards and upside down? I just,
Well, thanks, Jerry.
His point being that you can never rotate it to see it upright.
It's always going to be incorrect.
Well, yeah, and now I can never unsee that. Thank you.
And also, there's just absolutely, I mean, I get that it harkens back to a different, you know, era of watchmaking, but this isn't an old analog watch. I don't understand the point of having it on there. Other than to say it looks similar to a watch. Well, it's not an analog watch, so stop trying that.
And that's a point you can kind of make about the design as a whole, right? And something I kind of made in the review, but maybe backed away from a little. You can definitely say that this sort of harkens back to that old style watch design. It looks more like the watches of the past than what the 360 is trying to be with the very, very futuristic design. I think personally, I would prefer the look of the 360. But there's definitely a place for something that looks like a normal watch that you would wear just, you know, doing whatever, that doesn't necessarily attract the attention that the 360 does.
Yeah, other than the size, And shoot, analog watches today are huge as well. It does look a lot like, you know, a fashion watch you just buy at a store.
Mm.
You know, sure that's what they were going for. They want something that, you know, if you want to make something that appeals for everybody, you have to start somewhere.
I mean, I just my whole thing on it is that the whole idea of having the digital, completely digital watch face is you can change the watch face to suit your mood or the day or what you're wearing or whatever, but that the other design is so, you know, the external design is so imposing that you can't really shift around the watch face a ton because it doesn't always match up with the external styling.
And they've done a pretty good job with the watch faces on here, I think. Obviously the markers always line up with what you've got there because that's the way a watch works. But the customization comes from having other stuff around the outside. One has a battery meter that runs all the way around the circumference of the screen. Another one lets you have little compass readouts at the bottom and step counters and all this other stuff. So it's not so much about the design, or the design is different in different watch faces. But it's about getting functionality in there as well, and that's where LG's taking advantage of the sensors in this thing, rather than having watch-based apps, which they could have done, but they've built it into the watch faces instead, and that gives it much more of a kind of watchy feel, if you want to call it that.
It's not a bad watch. I was pleasantly surprised by how many people said, "Cool, I'm getting it now."
I think the big... Sorry, the big thing for me with this is the battery life, especially since, I mean, we kind of did the review half on the old 44W1 firmware and half on the new firmware. I've got to say, the lag fix that we've seen for the Moto 360 definitely applies to this as well. Much, much smoother on the 44W2 firmware, and battery life seems a lot better as well, so...
So, by the way, I got that firmware on the Moto 360 this week. I think it's pushed out for the G-Watch and everything else as well. And it has all but gotten rid of the lag on the 360,
yep,
which is awesome.
Anytime I would get a card with a calendar appointment on it, it would always tell me plus 61 more, which I don't think is right to start with. And whenever I'd swipe that away, I was staring at a blank screen for 2 seconds. Now I'm not.
It seems like they've just tightened up the software in general. I mean, I'm not sure what issues you guys might have had with the 360. I haven't used it a whole lot, but there were issues here with notification cards just kind of sticking around and being blank. Just general animation lag. Some of the watch faces didn't display stuff properly, and this update has fixed that and killed the lag and just made it a much better product.
It sounds like there may have been a bug or two in the way it...
Oh, well, there was a bug or two in the 441 firmware because the damn thing reset itself and properly reset itself, booted to recovery and wiped the data and then rebooted spontaneously a couple of days back, which is pretty funny.
More big news with that update actually is that there's now support for GPS in the software. Now, I kind of thought Google
can't really do anything.
Well, right. I kind of thought Google muddled the message on that a little bit the other day because it's like Android Wear supports GPS, yay! But not if you don't have a watch that's not the Sony Smartwatch 3,
which isn't on sale yet.
Which up for pre-order now. It's going to ship from Verizon, which is a little weird. I mean, that's kind of an obvious Sony Verizon thing given the Z3V this week. But Jerry's shaking his head. What's going on in there?
You know, if you are using an Android Wear watch, it's connected to a phone that's within 30 feet that has GPS. Just stop.
Exactly.
Battery draining extra radio in my watch. And if you need a standalone watch, Samsung makes an excellent one from what I've heard.
Yeah, I don't really see what the benefit. I mean, okay, apps that run the watch, you can always pull the location directly from your phone. I mean, who knows what they will enable later on. Maybe there's going to be some app that runs on the watch that needs GPS right then and there. We'll all look like idiots for doubting it. But right now, for most stuff, location from your phone is good enough.
Well, but what about this? Because Android Wear isn't only for watches. And that's why I'm looking ahead to, like, what's the next thing that they're going to put Android Wear on that's not a watch that you really might not want connected to a phone?
But Android Wear, as it stands, has to be connected to the internet somehow.
Or it doesn't really do anything.
If you build a standalone device that can connect to the internet, it's not going to have a tiny 400 milliamp hour battery in it. That's a completely different animal. So, yeah, you're right. It could be for something in the future that that we just can't even get our minds around. But that device is going to be very, very different from a watch.
And as it stands now, we like to think of GPS as, okay, as like this encompassing thing that means location. A lot of times your phone's not actually using GPS for your location. It's using network triangulation to get you started, and your watch isn't going to have that. I mean, the smartwatch 3 just having a GPS chip in it, it's going to take a long time to lock on, and it's just not going to quite, I'm assuming it's not going to be quite the snappy location experience that you think of when you think of having your phone pull down your location.
It'd probably be very accurate, but it's going to eat the battery to death and take forever to give you the location.
We're going to find out. I've got one on order, so we'll see. I just thought the message got a little muddied in there the other day.
The whole update was kind of muddy.
Yeah.
Almost your device is getting it before the any kind of announcement went out, and then it was on some but not others, and a bit confusing.
I have yet to hear anybody with the Gear Live getting it. If you're using the Gear Live and you did get the update, hit us on Google Plus so we know it's out there for it. Mine doesn't have it.
Yeah, my G-Watch got it 2 days ago, so.
Let's 3 days. Yeah, it looks like it's getting it. I see some people saying it. So, yeah, I mean, it's pushing. But yeah, the whole thing was just a little weird. I don't know. I'm still very happy with it. And it's still so early. I can't stress that enough. Just, you know, how early we are in the life cycle of Android Wear.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think Android Wear is probably the best Gen 1 product we've seen from Google, isn't it?
Might well be. Like, I just can't bring myself to write about Google Glass anymore.
I got mine right here.
Google Glass is one of those things where I love the idea until I actually tried it. And now I'm like, yeah, $1,500. That was a lot of experimental money.
Yep. Let's dive into the Q&A and see what people are asking about this. I know people have a lot of Nexus questions. We're going to get to that next, I promise.
There is no Nexus. It's all a lie.
Idle95 asks, why do you guys think you're so special having an LG G-Watch R? I have one and made two reviews, and Alex thinks he's God that he has one. I don't know.
Alex, quit acting like you created all of us.
Wow. This guy has stuff.
Just get off your soapbox, Alex. Jeez.
Man, wow. People are in bad moods today.
I don't know, but Lemmy told me Alex was God, so...
Let's see. Alex, thank you again for doing your job, by the way.
You conceited son of a...
Wendell
I'm still
says,
trying to find the comment here. I wasn't reading that.
Wendell says, the G-Watch R minute marks are to camouflage the size of the bezel.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
But that still doesn't explain the square E. That just... I don't know. I expect it to be a whole bunch of stuff underneath, and it's some weird computer decimal code. I don't know.
I'm sure. That's going to be one of those things where there was some big argument going on, and somebody says, "Why?" You know, somebody probably said exactly that. Why is it upside down? This thing doesn't move. And they say, "No, that's the way watches look."
Production line's already rolling.
Yeah.
Blake has a question. He says, does anyone know what the star on the right side of the notification bar is in the Lollipop preview?
Yes. Yes. I had to yell at these guys for this. Yes, I yelled at Jerry about it on Wednesday because I think he asked it, or Andrew or somebody did. It's for when you've set the... All right, let me walk you through how this works. When you hit the volume button in Lollipop, you get, you know, your little volume slider, and then you have three things. It says none, priority, and all for notifications. When you set it to priority, you get this little star up there, so it means you're in priority mode. Any apps that you have set to priority mode, and you can set individual apps.
Or people.
Those will come through. And so it's just letting you know that you've set it to priority mode. There was something, what was the hang-up that we weren't quite sure about?
I think it was just the fact it didn't quite work.
Oh, the hang-up was we were confusing it with the different priorities of notifications baked into Android as a whole, where you can set high priority for calls, low priority for, you know.
That's on a developer side, yeah. There are, I think it's 5 levels of notifications, and so that's what I wasn't quite sure about, yeah.
Again, yeah, the highest level will give you little pop, you know, drop-down notifications like phone calls and apps, and then you can have lower-end ones that don't bother you or buzz you at all. But that's for developers to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting implementation and a really good implementation. But yeah, there's a lot going on there. They're kind of more moving parts than I expected.
The big worry I have is that developers are going to think that their app is more important than it actually is to people and be like, oh, I need every notification that comes from my messaging app to be the absolute highest priority and pop down in the middle of your game. And that's might be a bad thing.
And those are the apps that I will write about every time and say they suck. If you do it, I will do everything in my power to make everybody hate your app. Don't do that. If you need to, cool. But please don't do that. I'm done.
Ooh, let's see. Somebody just commented on the original Moto 360 versus LG G Watch R thing that Andrew and I did from Vegas. Mm-hmm. Is this in the full G-Watch R review? Not a single comment about which is easier to read in direct sunlight. Leaves me wondering if someone has a favorite and doesn't want to say out loud that this or the other one is easier to read outside. Well, one, Andrew and I didn't get to use them both outside.
We used them inside only. Right.
Alex, you don't have a 360 there, right?
I do not. I mean, I've had no trouble using this in any conditions outdoors. It's, you know, as readable as any decent smartphone screen outside.
Man, people are in bad moods today. I'm in a good mood. That's what it is.
Go put the L preview on your phone and you can get a little star on the top to feel better.
And then you're a star.
And then you'll get a G-Watch R because you're a star.
G-Watch right. Star.
You want to take a quick break and when we come back, talk about Andrew's Nexus time?
Yeah, the show segment with its own jingle and stuff.
Yeah, it's Nexus time. Anyway, you guys don't even... We'll be back in a minute. Okay, folks, I know we have some IT types listening to this podcast, and I know this because they're the ones always writing in and asking Jerry to answer their questions instead of me. I get it. But now it's time for me to give back a little bit, because I'm about to drop a little knowledge bomb on you about Igloo and Igloo software. Igloo is going to change the way you look at your company's intranet, and it's going to change the way your company's employees look at the company intranet. And by proxy, here's how I've got it figured out, it's going to change the way the company's employees look at you. Now, stick with me here. Rockstar status is well within reach. Just hang on. Now, Igloo lets you build an intranet that you actually want to use, and more important, it lets you build an intranet that your employees will want to use. It's built with easy-to-use apps, it's got file sharing, it's got blogs, it's got shared calendars, task management, and more. It's got everything you could need to get everyone working together, holding hands in one configurable cloud platform in the sky, because that's where the clouds are, duh. And Igloo has responsive design so you can work in the office, at home, or on the go. It'll work from any modern browser or right from the latest and greatest Android device or iPhone, whatever you've got, really. And you can sign up now to start building your mobile-friendly Igloo intranet. It's free to use with up to 10 of your favorite coworkers. Just go to igloosoftware.com/android. That's igloosoftware.com/android. Okay, we're back. Okay, we're back. Are we back?
I think so.
Back. All right, let's talk Nexus. Nexus 9 is still available for pre-order. It didn't sell out or anything yet, did it?
I think it's pre-order. You can still click the button on Amazon and Google Play.
Cool. I'm not a big fan of doing those, like, three posts a day. It's for sale, it's not for sale, it's for sale, it's not for sale.
Right.
It still says leaves the warehouse by November 3rd. Google still says... Lollipop starts pushing to people on the 3rd, so that's all lining up, so cool. Yeah, so that's still coming. You can pre-order the Nexus 6 on the 29th. What is that, Wednesday? Don't know what time. Somebody's asking what time.
Whenever Google just decides to flip the switch.
Yeah. So let's talk Nexus 9. Andrew got to see it yesterday.
Yep, and touch it. It was... It's a big Nexus tablet. I think that it's larger than I expected it to be. I was kind of thinking, oh, the 4:3 aspect ratio means it's not quite as tall, and it's, you know, it distributes the width a little bit more. It's you know, you can't wrap your hand around it. You know, you can't hold it comfortably like you can a large phone or a Nexus 7. You know, a Nexus 7, you can just hold it like a big phone and put your hand around it. The Nexus 9 is, you know, it's wide, you know, because it's 4.3. So it's just like if you've ever held an iPad, it's you have to hold on to the bezel a little bit and kind of cradle it in your hand, which might be a downer for some people that have gotten used to the Nexus 7 size. I know I have, you know, being able to just sit in bed and hold it with one hand and, you know, read for a prolonged period of time and manipulate the screen with my thumb on my same hand. That's just not really an option with the Nexus 9. It's kind of hold it in one hand and then use your other hand for navigation. And
how does that work? Sorry, how does that work with landscape orientation? Because you have the thicker bezels at the top and bottom. When you hold it in portrait, you flip it around, and then it's kind of, you have the easier sort of grip ability on it there.
Right. So that's kind of the interesting thing when you turn it landscape, which it's kind of weird. Like they haven't made up their mind that it's supposed to be mostly used in landscape or mostly used in portrait. I mean, the ports and the buttons and everything are oriented like that should be used in portrait. But the top and bottom bezels are large. You can put your thumb there and hold onto it like it's supposed to be used in landscape. So that definitely helps when you hold it in a landscape. You can put your thumb there and, you know, squeeze on the bezel to hold it. But it's still, you're holding in one hand, you know, resting it on your lap or, you know, whatever, and navigating with the other hand. So, I mean, it's approaching 1 pound, which is starting to get up there a little bit, especially when you compare to the Nexus 7. So, I don't know, some people voiced, you know, their opinion about that being too large and too heavy in the comments of the our little hands-on. I obviously haven't used it long enough to say definitively whether it's too large for me, but as someone who's never been a fan of large 10-inch-ish tablets, I'm a little worried about that.
And it makes it all the stranger that Google seems to have ditched the 7, right? Because the 7 isn't even on sale anymore. It's not on the site. We don't really have anything replacing the Nexus 7 in that sort of budget.
Or the Nexus 10.
The Nexus 10, it was what it was, but you can kind of see the 9 as more of a replacement for the 10 in that large tablet space. And the 7 was a really, really popular device, and a really popular smaller device, a cheaper device. Well, and that's not something you're getting with the 9.
The 6 replaces the 7. You have, what, an inch difference? If the 9 can replace the 10, being an inch different.
Well, can the 6 replace the 7, 649 or whatever it is? Because that's the other appeal of the Nexus 7, was it was way, way cheaper.
That's a different can of worms.
So I kind of have a problem with the size just on a personal side, but I don't have a problem with the aspect ratio even after Jerry tried to, you know, scare me.
Because there's something wrong with you.
I like the fact that, so on a large device, it kind of feels like I'm holding this keyboard, you know, on a normal 16x9 tablet, because it's super wide when you're holding it in landscape and it's super tall when you're holding it in portrait, and it feels awkward in both situations. The Nexus 9 doesn't feel awkward no matter which way you hold it. You know, more awkward than its size. So I'm kind of okay with that. Aspect ratio gives you more room vertically in landscape when you're looking at documents or a web page. You know, you have all that chrome at the top and the bottom of a web page that can get, or a browser can get in the way. So I don't have a problem with that.
That's what kills me. 4x3 isn't good enough when Google knows this and has produced a 3x2 device.
Well, this is a step closer than 16x9, at least.
I just, every time I watch a video, which is what I mostly do on a tablet, and it's letterboxed, I'm going to email you.
Well, that's what some people said. They said, how can it be good for media watching at 4:3? It's like, well, the screen still looks pretty good, and it's high resolution, so, I mean, if it has letterboxes, that's fine. Me personally, out of, you know, all of the hours I spend on the tablet, I spend not a majority of it watching video and
that's going to make
widescreen.
Yeah.
So, and all that other time, you have a ton of room to work vertically when you're holding it in landscape. So, but all of that philosophical talk about aspect ratios aside, it's looks like a big widened out Nexus 7 that's better executed with metal around the sides and just feels better in front-facing speakers. You know, whether or not that's worth, you know, almost double the price to you of a Nexus 7, that's, you know, that's a personal choice as well.
How's the feel? Is it soft touch, you said?
Yeah, it's the same as the Nexus 7, just about. I think people pointed out that the colors are slightly different. I think it's mostly the colors are slightly different and the texture is slightly different. So, you know, the way that light, you know, when you put them side by side, it looks a little different in the same light, but it feels nice. You can hold on to it, although I wonder how long you can hold on to it, you know, comfortably before you start getting some of that hand fatigue, like when you hold up a larger tablet. But I didn't get to use it very long, so I can't really say, other than I picked it up and it felt like it was worth, you know, $400 or $500, just like when you pick up an iPad, which is good, because they're asking for $500 for
it. It's not cheap, and that's a big deal for me, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the Nexus 7 is, like, you know, cheap for what it is and how well it performs. And this, you have less, and, you know, the Nexus 7 is not perfect, and you notice little imperfections and things, and people have had some performance issues. But you kind of forgive it at $229. Or $199 or whatever you got it on a sale, less forgiving when it's $399, $479, $500-something dollars with LTE.
I'll go a step further, and what really, really has me thinking is I get why it's more expensive. I understand the parts that they've used cost a lot more money, and maybe not $250 more money, but somebody's got to make some money somewhere. But for what I use a tablet for, man, the Kindle Fire at a third of the price is starting to look like a much better option. And that, you know, is there a space for another $500 tablet? I know you could say, look at the sales of the iPad. And that's one way to look at it. But there are no other options if you want to use iOS. With Android, there are plenty of other options.
You know, and actually, that's a good point, because we're talking Tegra K1, and that's not something that's as ubiquitous as, you know, Snapdragon 801 or 805 at this point. Or
this thing, I mean, operating system aside, this is a little desktop replacement, dude. I've used that processor on a developer board, you know, for a little bit. It's a desktop replacement. This is a whole other league that we haven't been in.
I mean, I reviewed a Chromebook with a slower version of it than what's in this tablet, and it pushed 12 tabs in Chrome around just fine. So that's, I mean, I didn't get to, so the software on the one I got to use was not final, wasn't signed into a Google account. So obviously, you know, we're past the days of having, you know, stutter swiping around the home screens and placing widgets on the screen. So I couldn't really get a feel for performance, but right now I have no reason to think that it's going to be slow or incapable, though we still don't have any kinds of, you know, proper dual window or multitasking kind of setup like some of what Samsung's done on their tablets in Lollipop. But as far as single application performance, and I'm sure it's going to scream.
Right, let's talk multitasking for a second. I know Android Police had that rumor thing a few weeks ago, whatever. But Jerry spotted something. I know Eric Richardson, don't want to say big time developer, but a good developer at a good developer house. How about that? Pretty much said the same thing on a Google Plus yesterday, today. I think it was this morning. That it's kind of looking like when Google is suggesting ways to properly design apps now in Lollipop, that it's kind of starting developers down that path.
Correct. No more defined size layouts. They give guidelines how to make it responsive, and a minimum size and a maximum size, and your app should be able to scale to any size in between. And after a little bit of digging, they actually started this way back in Honeycomb. They started to throw out guidelines that would lead you down that path. Dude, I got to think it's coming. I also got to think it's a year off.
Oh, hey, Jerry. Jerry, my phone's ringing. It's for you. It's WebOS fans.
Yeah.
WebOS, if you don't remember, was, you know, designed to run on anything, really.
I thought anyway. It was designed to tell me I had too many cards every time I phoned.
No! No, that was the pre was designed to do that, not necessarily WebOS.
What were you saying, Alex?
I was just going to say, I think we were talking about this before the podcast. I think we're all in agreement that it is coming eventually. Obviously, it's not ready yet because we don't have it yet. But with these larger devices that we're getting now and the stuff that we're seeing on the developer side, and, of course, bringing Android apps to Chrome OS, this is all right. Sort of...
All resizable windows there.
Yeah, it's all coming together in this same area. So I would not be surprised at all if next year at I.O. someone's up on stage and, yeah, proper multi-window, multitasking, whatever.
I mean, you can trash talk on the Surface, and I think we do all the time, but when you have apps that are done right on the Surface and you resize them and snap them into different sizes and are getting things done that way, it's a really nice experience.
Well, see, you nailed it right there with done correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Google's laying out a framework so you can build every app to potentially, if this is really what's happening, work in a multi-window setup. But if you go through the App Store and you look at, you know, how few apps were updated with other design guidelines, we're going to end up with this really cool system designed so any app can work, and 95% of the apps aren't going to work. And that is the other side of that open double-edged sword.
I mean, yeah. It's analogous to using all the multi-window stuff on Samsung phones. Yep. They've been trying to court developers for years to do it on the Note and now the tablets. And it's still one of these things where as soon as until 90-something percent of the apps support it, it might as well be 0%.
Yep.
Because when I go to do multi-window and I can't, you know, think to myself which apps do it and which apps don't do it, you know, as soon as I get over that hurdle, then it's fine. But right now, I open up the Note 4, 40, 30% of apps will even condense down into multi-window. And that's after years of courting developers.
Yeah. This is where the whole developer preview thing comes in. You've got to imagine next year, I think the Fireside Chat, Dave Burke was saying that this is basically the way they plan on doing it from now on. So if there is a feature as big as this coming, you've got to imagine it'll be a big part of the developer preview, and then we'll have maybe 3-4 months for developers to get behind this and perhaps to be updated so there are no issues when eventually it does launch. And if you just at a platform level, then there's a much greater incentive for developers to get on board with it.
Right, and I just want enough developers to get on board where the developers that won't will just dwindle away, and eventually you'll have the cream of the crop from Google Play will all be compatible.
And I don't think you can't be much more right when you say it's all about working on the phone and working on the tablet and working in a Chrome OS sort of environment. I mean, that's when it really starts to make sense. You know,
and it's all about Google making it easier to do it the right way than to do it the old way where they kind of hard code it. And right now that's not the case.
It might not even be about running more than one app at a time on a tablet.
Right. You hit it. This could be just so your app looks great on a phone, a tablet, and a Chromebook.
And a 4x3 tablet and a 3x2 Chromebook and a 16x9.
That's what this may be about. It would fit so nicely for a resizable window design, you know, on your home screen.
I still kind of hesitate when I see, you know, anything near that baked into Android at an OS level because of the nature of Android and that anyone can do anything with it. And, I mean, all those, what do we call them, craplets, those horribly cheap tablets out there, you know, imagine if that was available to them, you know, just like it's available to HTC and Samsung. And
they can barely run one app at a time anyways.
That's, you just, you know, nobody will buy them.
Yes, they will.
But they won't buy them twice.
And they'll email us.
You know, everybody makes that mistake when you see that $40 tablet at Walgreens, but you won't make that twice after you've used one.
No, they'll buy an iPad, and that's not good for the ecosystem. It's good for the iOS ecosystem. But, so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where it goes, is my point.
I just, if what you guys are saying is true, then what about that guy that's super bright and has this tiny little company he started in Taiwan who could do things better than what we have now. You want to take that away from him. What's wrong with you guys?
I hate America. Ooh, that's totally going to get chopped out of context now.
And yeah. By me. By me. I can't wait to...
It's going to end up on CNN. Phil hates America.
New ringtone right there.
I just know open, whether you mean open source or an open platform or an open application store.
You got to take the good with the bad.
Right. But it's a very double-edged sword. And, you know, the word fragmentation got applied to it. It's not fragmentation. It's a byproduct of being open on all accounts. And in the end, I think it's a good thing.
There's Andrew, real life, retweeting me already. Andrew's fired for the next 5 minutes.
Nice happened knowing before. Him. Only 5 minutes this time.
We might need you on the podcast again. Let's see what Nexus-y questions. Am I forgetting anything? I mean, there's really nothing new on the Nexus player front yet, right?
One thing, Andrew, there have been some rumors and some speculation floating around that the soft touch on the Nexus tablet is actually covering a metal back. Did you get that impression?
No, it felt to me like it was a full plastic back that's just placed on the back of the tablet. Just the way that the seams line up with the plastic going to the metal on the sides, that's what it feels like to me. Although, you know, it's just because the plastic doesn't wrap all the way around like it does on the Nexus 7, and the Nexus 7... It definitely the Nexus 9 definitely feels more solid, you know, when you tap on the back than the Nexus 7. I mean, we know it's kind of hollow and you can just peel that back blade off. I didn't get the indication that it's just like a coating on top of metal, though.
Okay. Thank you.
This is the guy who thought the back of the Nexus 7 was the same as the back of the Nexus 5, though. So take everything he says with a pinch of salt.
No. Oh, no. That's one color. Was it the white Nexus 5?
Let's not get back into that again.
And the other...
All I remember is you were wrong.
I don't have my Nexus 7 next to me. But they are very similar in texture-wise, but I just have the black Nexus 7 and the black Nexus 9 I held. I don't know how the other colors are going to be or if they've done something smart with the white one so that it doesn't discolor and get nasty. I don't know.
Hey, I want to go back to the Lollipop stuff real quick in a minute, and I guess the Nexus 5 or 7, because that's what you've been playing with it on. But the new way of setting up these devices is so much nicer. I mean, first of all, I've got two-step turned on everything, because Andrew likes to try to hack into my account when I'm not looking. And now, you know, no longer do you have to have an app-specific password, but you do have to have two-step, which is actually a little easier to do. So I can actually log into phones on the fly as long as I have some other device with me and don't have to go. Right.
You can use your other device as the second step within
itself. Right.
And I will be the guy who sits here and screams, well, that takes away 50% of the effectiveness of two-step authentication.
Why is that?
Because you no longer have to use an app-specific password more, you know, on a separate machine. It just, oh, well, we completely trust that the right person is holding this and nobody's got anything.
No.
Well, so tell me this, though. So
That's no different than if, all right, I have two devices here, right? I'm trying to log into this, and I'm going to get my my two-step code off this, right?
Same exact thing.
How is that different than using this to go get an app-specific password? The only reason I don't is because it's a pain.
Okay.
The whole thing, you have two-step turned on. You've authenticated, you know, Google has decided that you are logged in properly into one device, so that means you can transfer that login information to the other device, and you still have to verify your Google account password.
This.
Well,
this.
My Nexus 9 doesn't have a full-size USB port.
NFC. I'm a little leery...
I get what you're saying.
How that's not transmitted through NFC. It's probably Bluetooth.
It's through Bluetooth.
Okay, Bluetooth, man. If I was at your house with the right equipment, and what's to stop you from doing it at Starbucks where if people will put computers in USB chargers to try to hack your crap, they will try to sniff Bluetooth if they can see a way to easily do it.
I could see that, but they could also just take your phone and have your authenticator
right too. Right. I just I'm I don't want to praise this as the best security solution in the world. It's the most convenient. I will go along with that. And any security that's convenient will make more people use it, and that's a good thing.
Right. I think that it's secure enough, and it means that you don't get frustrated and turn off two-step when you try to set up your tablet and you don't have your authenticator with you.
Correct.
I think that that's important, because nowhere near 100% of people use two-step.
I just speak for all the guys with big bushy beards who are saying, that's so unsafe. Oh, my God, Google. Somebody has to speak for those guys, and that's me.
Only if you say it like that, though.
That's how I say it when you're not around.
Anyway, I mean, that's getting easier. Now, that said, and this is the big caveat to all this, right? We don't know what the carriers are going to do, and there's a question in the Q&A here that we'll read in a second, too. Same thing. I have no idea what the carriers are going to do. I know we saw that one kind of half mention that T-Mobile was maybe going to do Wi-Fi calling, you know, later next year. We just don't know yet.
Right.
Everything the carriers are going to do is going to require lubrication. That's the only way I can say it on this show.
And so the way that it doesn't make me very hopeful the way that the setup assistant on the AT&T Note 4 is.
AT&T's got its whole separate Verizon
thing. Sign up with AT&T and do stuff, and if you hit no thanks, it dumps you onto the home screen with absolutely no setup.
Right.
Are they going to just hijack all that stuff out on Lollipop too? Because that really stinks, because the new setup assistant is good.
I sure hope not.
You don't want our help? Fine, you get nothing.
Yeah.
No soup for you.
We'll be sure to nag you in 2 more hours to ask you to make an AT&T account.
Yeah, I think the NFC part will probably be part of whatever devices eventually launch with L. As for the rest of it, I think that's like everything else in the Android setup scheme right now. That is going to be open to anyone and everyone to just strip out what they don't like.
Really stinks.
Yeah, but it's part of being open, I guess.
Well, now, we don't know until we see the source code. Maybe the new setup APK is closed source and part of Google Apps and devices will be required to use it. That's a possibility. I would love to see it. And that's so against everything I believe in.
I was going to say, I love the hypocritical nature of this.
I still think that, so they still have a lot of work to do with, right now you can, now you can choose which apps to restore and choose what device to restore from, but it still does the same crappy restore as before when you signed in, where all it does is just queues up the Play Store with 60 apps to download and brings in none of your data or your settings or anything like that. There still needs to be some kind of way that they can do that in a better way. Compartmentalize it out so it can't get all junked up.
Let's do some Q&A, then we'll take another break, and I want to talk about this Verizon phone I have sitting here. Victor asks, does the Nexus 5 have the hardware capable for double-tap screen to wake up once it gets the Lollipop update?
Ooh, that's a good question. Officially, there is a coprocessor that could be used to listen for events like that while the phone is idle, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be used for something else. It's already used for step tracking in KitKat. I imagine they're going to want to put it to use more for Google Fit than they will be for Tap to Wake. So if it's there, it would surprise me.
We've seen a lot of custom ROMs use it, right? Because it's just it's a tweak in the kernel.
But custom ROM makers can get away with it because you're used to maybe having bad battery life in exchange for features in a custom ROM. But Google's not going to include something that knowingly shortens your battery life when it's such a minuscule feature.
And the Nexus 5's battery life is already bad.
Yeah, and it's the same reason why the whole ambient display thing probably isn't coming to the N5.
Well, yeah, LCD.
You can do it without, but that's another part of it.
Dave asks, with Andrew's hands-on of the Nexus 9 and the NVIDIA Shield, which does he like the feel of more and why?
Those are just, it's like comparing, I don't know, two things that are not similar.
I will absolutely weigh in here. Nexus 9.
I will weigh in here. NVIDIA Shield.
Ooh. I will say that they're just two different sizes, and you can hold them differently.
They are two different feels, yeah.
I mean, Actually, it's just that the Nexus 9 feels lighter because it's thin and more distributed. The Shield tablet, it feels heavy and dense because it is kind of heavy. I wouldn't say that either one feels more or less premium. I mean, you know, they don't bend when you put them in a bag or anything like that. I don't know. I think I kind of like the Shield tablet just because it's small and I can actually hold it in one hand.
Score.
But I mean, it's a 7-inch widescreen tablet versus a 9-inch 4x3 tablet. You know, it's just a lot. They're different situations.
In an ideal world, I would want both. At home, I would use that Nexus 9 with that beefy, monstrous horsepower and that amazing screen. But for a tablet that I'm throwing in a backpack, man, smaller, better.
Yeah, and I found out that the little stash pocket on my Timbuktu bag perfectly fits the Nexus 7 and nothing larger, so that kind of stinks.
Well, you'll have to buy a new stash bag.
Here's an interesting one, kind of unrelated. Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce this. I'm going to say Sunil. Hopefully that's it. If not, I'm sorry. Jerry, I recently reread an excellent article you wrote a few years ago regarding how bad memory booster apps can be. Are there any negative effects from using a battery booster app?
Other than it's running and using part of your battery all the time, it's depends on the app. I mean, some of them are complete trash. They're scams. That's like everything else. Others, you know, if you want it to shut off sync and shut off network communication at certain times, that's certainly going to boost your battery. But is it still a smartphone if you've got it disconnected from everything? I don't think they're harmful, but I just invest in another charger. And through the day, if you have to charge your phone, just charge your damn phone.
That's my answer. Lee was the one who had the question about carrier versions of these Nexus phones. What is the advantage of ordering this from the Play Store over going to a U.S. carrier store and buying there?
Other than the experience in the carrier store likely being awful?
Well, the carrier stores is probably... Well, maybe... No, we don't know that yet. I was going to say that's where you're going to get the subsidized version from, but we don't know.
Well,
for sure.
We know. Come on, yes. We know.
Contract will be subsidized, right?
Yeah, it's...
Or it's... you say subsidized, but also, you know, on Jump from T-Mobile and right. Next from AT&T and Edge from Verizon, where you can finance it, because $650 all-in-one charge is a lot for a lot of people.
I am going to... imagine
that would involve getting a phone that's locked to a particular network as well, the GSM carriers.
I am going to go on record and... Now, I have had excellent support from HTC when the power button on my Nexus 1 stopped working. They were very quick to fix it. Didn't cost me a thing. Quick turnaround. But if you buy your phone, your Nexus 6 from your carrier, and in 3 days something goes wrong with it, you can march right back in there. You can put it on the shelf. You can say, I need to fix
this. No, but you can't. No, because the one time I've had to do it was with the M7 last year, and because just the way it worked, I went back into AT&T and said, here, this doesn't work. They said, all right, you have to call this company, whatever. You have to send it back to them. They will send you a new one. Like, you can't just march back in there and hand it to them, and they give you a new one.
Usually they ship you a new one.
I will demand that the people who took my money take care of me.
I completely agree with you. I'm just saying that's not how it worked.
I know that's the way Sprint and T-Mobile both will... The people in the store will... be nice and put in the order for you, but right. They'll overnight you a replacement phone.
I mean, and it's worth asking when you go to buy this stuff. By all means, say, well, you know, what's your return policy? How long do I have? Do I bring it back to you? Do I have to ship it in?
But still, you'll get one probably overnighted from the carrier's warehouse somewhere rather than, and you know, you get to go into a store and complain to somebody in person. But again, like I said, the carrier store just kind of sucks to go into in the first place.
I hear so many stories from people who have had to deal with Google support or HTC or Samsung. My personal evidence, I've dealt with both Samsung and HTC, and it went very, very smooth and fine. But those stories can't all be incorrect. So if that bothers you, and I could be completely wrong, make sure you check like Phil recommends. Maybe it's better. I hate to use the word better. Easier customer service to buy through a carrier.
Go into our forums and ask people there too, because a lot of experience there. What about the multitasking? We already kind of talked about that. Ian kind of asked the same thing about the carrier versions and updates. Yeah, I mean, again, we'll just have to see. I have a feeling...
Really don't want to put our foot down on that.
Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling if you buy, no matter where you buy it from, they're going to get updates relatively quickly. But again, we've seen bad things happen there. We just can't say until it happens. Sutton has a question about Inbox. We'll talk about Inbox in a minute.
Wendell asked about the Nexus 5 supporting voice over LTE with Lollipop. I don't recall anything about voice over LTE being specific with Lollipop. Is the support there?
I mostly have, you know, carriers or...
Because carriers are doing voice over LTE with GCAT now.
Since they all implement it differently, it's usually only carrier phones that are working now.
Unfortunately, it's not like 2G and 3G voice.
Yeah, I can't think of any unlocked phone that supports it on any network off the top of my head.
Josh has a good question. Yes. Is Apple Pay going to make NFC payments more widely used on non-Apple devices, or will we all be frowning at a bunch of Apple-only tap-to-pay stations?
Frowning.
Yep. I don't think we're going to be... Well, I don't think we'll be frowning for the same reason he thinks we'd be frowning. It's NFC, and the terminals support all of the things. They don't support just Apple Pay. They're the same terminals that we've seen at Walgreens that accept Google Wallet and MasterCard PayPass and some other weird NFC. It's just the terminal supports NFC and the software does. They just have to push the right button. We'll probably be frowning just because it's still kind of a hassle to use and not as convenient as pulling out your wallet and a credit card, honestly.
Go read some forums about that now. Most people don't live in Seattle. And if they go to Walgreens, Easy Pass works, but they don't have it turned on for the Nexus 5.
Yes, we're
going to see the same thing. It's going to be Apple support enabled only. I will put my name on that.
Well, so obviously we only have a week of trials of this right now, but basically the terminals are the exact same. I've been to plenty of places that just don't have the cord hooked up and it just doesn't work for anybody. But I think if anything, Apple Pay support coming out is just, a few more stores being aware that NFC is there and setting it up and then it works with everybody. I mean, it's just, there's absolutely no incentive to go through all the installing new terminals and everything to only accept payments from 40%. Of people in the U.S.
Ooh, here's one, and I could swear maybe Julian emailed us. I've seen this question recently. This is a good one for Jerry. Why are the phone batteries still measured milliamp hours instead of a more useful measurement of watt hours? This seems bizarre since the chemical makeup of batteries changes, which can increase the voltage of the battery. All laptop batteries are measured in watt hours. I've seen tablets measured in that, and I'm pretty sure the iPad is as well.
I just think it's manufacturers and tech reviewers and tech press just holding on to what they're more familiar with. I agree completely. Watt hours is a if you understand how it all works, watt hours actually tells you more. If you tell me, okay, this is 7.2 volts and it's 0.49 or 7.49 watt hours, whatever your tiny little battery is. That tells you more information than, 1,500 milliamp hours.
It's extra math that you have to do, though, right?
Well, in a way, it's the same way. If I tell you, oh, this new phone only has a 2,000 milliamp hour battery, that's not as good as another phone you may have just because you heard some numbers without actually doing any math. The other works the same way, too, once you get used to it. If I tell you something is 39 watt hours and it's just a standard 12.6 volt laptop charger, 9 volt, whatever it is, you will know once you're used to that, you'll understand what that means in terms of fill use. But right now you're not used to that, so everybody's just hanging on to a familiar number.
There's math involved because you're trying in your head to switch from watt hours to milliamp hours to get a reference for what the capacity is.
You know, that's – but
– Well, and see, I still think people need to get, to only think of milliamp hours. Only think of that number as a total capacity and not actual usage,
right,
which is why you have phones like especially the original Moto X that was not a huge capacity but was able to crank a lot out of there. HTC is another one.
I think ultimately if you're buying anything just because a specific number is high, you're probably doing it wrong. I mean, it's a good rough guide, but it's doesn't tell the whole story. Some phones have lower capacity batteries and have worse battery life because of it, but like Phil was saying, it's not the case everywhere. The M8's a good example. 2600, about middle of the road, but you get really great battery life out of it.
I will definitely ask around if there's any technical reason why the people making these devices want to keep advertising the battery capacity in milliamp hours.
Especially when you start talking about large tablets and you're talking about 6,900 milliamp hours.
Like Phil said, I know Lenovo and Toshiba both will give you the watt hours for the battery in their tablet. It may be in parentheses and it may only be printed on the back of the box, but it's there. They'll give it to you. I can't see any technical reason why. I think it's just we're latching on to a number that makes us feel better about ourselves. But I'll ask.
All right, let's take one more break. And when we come back, we will talk about the Xperia ZVED. Z3 VED, that's what I'm calling it. ZVED, I like that.
From
Verizon.
ZW.
Yes. And we'll talk about Google Inbox, and then we'll get out of here. Be right back. Okay, everybody, Phil here to talk to you about my favorite thing ever, and that's learning. I don't care what you've heard about heavy metal music or chicken wings or whatever else. I love learning. And that's why today I'm talking about lynda.com. It's an easy and affordable way to help you learn. You can instantly stream thousands, and we're talking thousands, of courses online. New courses are added daily. If a new version of your favorite app gets released and you need to figure out something new in it, chances are there's already an updated course at lynda.com just waiting for you. And these aren't homemade videos. They're created by experts in software and web development, photography, graphic design, and more. So you're learning about all sorts of things from some of the best in the business. And it's for beginners like me to the more advanced folks like most of you out there. And you can learn on the go with lynda.com apps for Android or iOS. And it's really been a lifesaver for me. Anytime I get stuck doing something in Photoshop or when I'm editing video, I just head straight to lynda.com and find the answer quickly and from someone who knows what they're talking about. Now, let's talk pricing. For $25 a month, you get unlimited access to more than 100,000 video tutorials, including new courses like Simple Android Development Tools, Android Studio First Look, and Building and Monetizing Game Apps for Android. Now, if you want to try lynda.com free for 7 days, here's what we worked out. Just go to lynda.com/AndroidCentral. That's lynda.com/AndroidCentral, and try it free for 7 days. And tell them I sent you. All right, we're back. So briefly, I think I want to talk about Xperia Z3V. Look at that. It's very shiny on the back, if you couldn't tell. Whee! Hi. Oh, look at that. Zception.
It goes forever.
Xperia Inception? Exception? I don't know. I'm kind of losing that. This is... Whoa! That's crazy.
It's like you can see back in time to a phone that was released 6 months ago.
Oh, wow.
Points for Dobie.
Wow, that is good. So, yeah, this is it. It's big. Look, there's a lot to like on this phone. I really do not mean to imply that this is a bad phone. I think it's a lot of good stuff going on here. The software is fine. I mean, I've never used Sony software as much as I've used for the past week. It's a lot of custom stuff in there to learn. It's okay. Whatever. What, Jerry? Or are you just yawning?
I didn't say a word. I'm sitting here thinking and listening.
If you're a big PlayStation fan, I think you got a big reason to look at this phone. But I completely agree with Alex that just some phones are more fun to hold and use, right? I think the Moto X is one, even this year's, even though I don't like it as much as last year's. The HTC One, both the M7 and M8 are good examples of that. Even Samsung, and even that's more of a plain design, but even Samsung phones are more fun to hold and use than this. This is just this block of glass and a power button. I kind of like the power button over there, actually.
And it was really cool a couple of years ago when they first came out with that design.
Yeah, and now, especially when you look at everything else that's available, every time I pulled that out of my pocket, it was just like, okay, fine. It just didn't give me that same feeling that almost every other phone in the LG G3 as well, that every other phone this year has given me.
It's just your hands aren't flat and angular like that.
Right.
They kind of addressed that with the proper Z3 by making, you know, the thickness of it, getting that down.
But that's not what we have here.
It isn't, but they are kind of evolving that, and it's what they're doing. But yeah, at the same time, that you basically got the design of the Z2 there fundamentally, haven't you?
I mean, every review, and I don't often read other reviews, but I started reading the other ones after ours came out as well, and everybody's just like, it's the Z2. Why? I don't know.
And Phil, I'm glad you brought up the sort of the boring point, if you like, the fact that Sony phones are just kind of, they've got to the stage now where so little has changed, and there's something to be said for consistency, but so little has changed that they're basically just kind of boring. The UI hasn't really changed since about 2012.
Shut up!
The design hasn't changed since 2013. it's still just this rectangular thing. And
I just spent $600 on a Sony phone.
At least let
him. Which one did you buy, Jerry? Which one did you buy?
The compact.
Okay, that's a pretty good phone.
Green,
okay, I'm.
But I mean,
decision justified.
It's a good phone despite a lot of things. I mean, the fact they haven't really changed the way the software works, the fact that the design of the icons and stuff is a little bit sort of Windows Vista-ish, if you want to call it that. It's not stylized and flattened at all. But the hardware is nice, you know, great battery life and all this other stuff.
There's a lot to learn there in the camera. There's a lot to like in the camera, I think. Just once you kind of get feel your way around for where everything is, when you get off the superior auto mode, and it was weird because it's like, all right, here are all these other modes, but you really want to go to manual to find, like, I couldn't figure out how to shoot HDR on the thing. Like, all right, I know I want to take an HDR shot. How do I do that? Well, you have to go to manual, and then you have to go to these scenes, and now you have HDR. It's just like, okay, stuff's rearranged, and some of that's just a matter of getting used to it. I get that.
Well, to touch on the camera, you took some pictures that you didn't want to put on the internet of your family, and
sure.
And we got to see, you know, a few of your kids and stuff. You took one picture in particular.
I didn't actually look and see the ones Alex put in the review.
But you took one in particular that is in an entirely different class. Even, you know, the S5 in the brightest daytime or the G3, which I think are really, really good smartphone cameras, don't come close.
Which one was it? I remember you mentioning it.
It was a picture of your daughter.
Yeah.
And it was as good as an entry-level mirrorless multiple-lens camera. I never thought I would say that, and I even admitted this may make me rethink my opinion of smartphone cameras. I don't know how much of that is software. You know, Sony is Sony. How much of that is hardware? But if you can take more pictures like that, that's actually a camera you can use for more than just Facebook.
I just don't want to use the phone, though, because it's just not fun to hold and feel. And maybe the compact will make that difference, and I hope it does.
I was thinking that it was just because I use so many Sony phones that I was kind of getting a bit burned out on them. But, I mean, Phil, you haven't used a Sony phone since the Xperia T, like, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You're having the same experience I have. So, I mean, my biggest problem with the camera isn't, I mean, it takes good shots, right? It took good shots a year ago, the same camera on the Z1. My problem is we're two flagships down from that, and it's basically the same camera. You know, they're moving backwards by standing still relative to everyone else.
But from what I saw, and don't get me wrong, it looks like from Phil's review and some others I read and from the original Z3 review, almost all your shots are going to look good. But they, you can get that with the G3 or with the S5 in good light. But there are a few, and I think I shared an imager album with a couple others that were in low light. Those are amazing. If you can do that, don't change a damn thing.
Low light was surprising. We were in a bar last Friday night, and I know if I was in there with the Moto X, it wouldn't even have been worth shooting. But you know, surprisingly not horrible with this one. So it's there's a really solid camera on this. I was really impressed with that. I don't need any of the PlayStation stuff. I don't need 90% of the Sony software on there. That's, you know, like weird feature stuff. But, you know, the camera I can get used to. I can learn that software just like I learned HTC software or LG software.
It's worth mentioning, and not so much for the Verizon model, but if you go to Sony and unlock your bootloader, you do lose all that.
Yes.
You get just a basic camera that takes basic Moto X 2014 level pictures.
Well, there's a reason for that, though, right?
Right.
You going to explain what the reason is?
Oh, well, I mean, Sony does not want you to be able to suck out bits and pieces and decompile their algorithms they use to take the data the camera lens sees and turn it into a beautiful picture. They've spent billions and billions of dollars on that, and they're a little bit afraid of you guys, rightfully so.
Well, I mean, they're right. It's their software.
Right. I'm not knocking them for it. Of course, right. I wish it was open and they shared with everybody and every camera phone was that good, or every camera. But it's not. It's theirs. They have a right to do that, and our right is to complain about it and not purchase their phones if it makes that much of a difference.
Maybe we'll get lucky and this Nexus 6 is as good in the camera department as everyone hopes it is. And Google
not
said,
holding my breath.
I'm not holding my breath either. I'm just crossing my fingers.
I ain't saying nothing.
I think I am going to try, and this is horrible timing because we have like 5 million things coming up in the next 2 weeks, but I do want to snag a T-Mobile model, I think.
Definitely do that.
And see how my opinion changes. Yeah.
I think, we're sort of talking internally about best Android phones right now. The Z3, I think, is the proper one, is probably up there with a lot of stuff. And like I was saying, my only real issue with it was the fact the camera hasn't changed in a couple of generations. But, you know, great screen. It's thinner and slimmer and easier to hold than the Z2. And it's great battery life as well.
So that's my thing about that. Google Inbox, do you want to talk about that for a second? Google is toying around with Gmail in a new way of doing it. I mean,
toying around with it for my feelings about email.
Oh, I've been using it for 24 hours now and only can use it on, you know, a proper Gmail account and not on my Google Apps account, which means none of my work email is coming to it, which is 90% of the email I get.
A good thing.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is if you use the different categories in Gmail now, it's basically that in an app instead of like a label under the drawer. It is the inbox you see, and it's based on that, and then you see it by day as well. I mean, it's kind of a cool idea. I like the idea. I really want to try it with something.
Google, get out of my inbox. Stop doing things that I don't tell it to do.
You know, those Naboo kids tablets?
Yeah.
A perfect email client for those.
Oh.
If you're a power user, just stay away.
Yeah, that was kind of the point in the little quick take thing that I wrote. I mean, I need to see everything that's coming in. I need to be able to see it quickly. I need to be able to deal with it quickly.
I've been using the Inbox app on my phone and tablet, and then seeing what happens on Gmail on the web, not using Inbox on the web, so I can, you know, when I swipe something away, where does it go and how does that work? And
it's done. You know,
it's done, which means it's just sitting in the inbox. And you know, uncategorized, unlabeled, and I'm a little too controlling over my email to just have just this big pile of things. Because if you're somebody like me who already has filters and labels, and you know, judiciously like manages things and uses priority inbox and stars the right things, you're already doing what inbox does, just in a more, you know, file manager kind of way rather than a fancy UI way. And trying to apply this inbox model to somebody who's already been using Gmail for years and years and has a system, it doesn't really mesh well.
I mean, that said, it doesn't have to be perfect today. It doesn't have to be, you know, I kind of don't have a feel for whether, like, this is great or this is going to fail. Like, everybody has to have it all figured out right this second. I'm guarantee you Google doesn't have it figured out. I don't have it figured out until I use it on a proper on really my work email. But I like the idea of somebody trying something different. I know everybody likes to complain about email and it's the worst thing to ever happen to everything. It's really not.
The best thing.
The one thing I can say about it is that I'm glad it's a separate product from Gmail, and that let them go all the way into doing what they're doing with Inbox rather than trying to implement some small things in a new version of Gmail and, you know, kind of making everybody mad for changing how email works. You know, we're still going to get a new version of Gmail that's going to look nice with L, and it's, you know, it's not going to act all weird like Inbox does.
Is this Gmail beta?
No,
I don't think so. You know, Google kind of tried that with Wave, and it failed miserably way back. I don't know. We were talking about this before. I think it's designed more for normal people who their inbox is just this unmanageable mess of all their stuff, and they need some way to make sense of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it strikes me as. Probably not intended for people like us, and probably not intended for people like us who are testing it right now. We'll have to wait and see how it progresses.
And before anybody mails in and complains, I didn't mean that it's bad that it's not for power users. Alex, of course, said it much more eloquently than I did. This is good for a lot of people. It's just not good for me.
I mean, most people's email inboxes are kind of like that big bundle of cables behind the entertainment center. And not all of us have that big bundle of cables behind the entertainment center because we've properly hidden cables and tied them together into groups and been OCD like that.
And labeled,
so we don't need organizational, you know, I don't need algorithms except for to handle spam, which is the way that, you know, Gmail does a good job with spam. I don't need those kind of algorithms applied to, you know, incoming promos and things like that.
Funny story. Funny story, my inbox invite went to the spam folder.
I saw that for a couple of people. It's pretty hilarious. They know you don't want it.
I think it's interesting. I think it's cool to see something different being done.
Well, it's a really good first step to doing something.
It's just Google made a really good client for Gmail that's separate from the Gmail client.
Which, are they going to bundle this on Android phones in a year or so? How confusing is that going to be?
On top of the regular email
client. Email, Exchange email, Gmail, and now Inbox, and
Messenger, messages, messaging.
And Hangouts, and Andrew's just going to lose it completely and curl up in a corner and die.
First thing I do on every on every phone is disable the non-Gmail email app anyways, so that'll be another one to disable.
Phil, you need to make Andrew use Exchange email just so he has to use that app.
Man, I mean, I tell you, back I remember using Exchange, and it actually worked pretty well.
I had to use it in college. We had Exchange email in college, and I hated every minute of it.
And from what I understand, it works really good on Android in recent builds. That was rough for a while.
All right. A little more Q&A, and then we're out of here.
Works for me.
I was going to stick a fork in it, but... Davin says, with low latency audio finally making its way to Android 5.0, will we finally see proper real-time music creation apps on Android?
And this is going to sound like I'm poo-pooing your idea, and I'm not. I'm not at all. If there's a market for it, Apple created that market for the iPad. There was no portable music creation, and Apple came out with it and said, you really, really need this. And now everybody that didn't need it thinks that they need it, and we all have it installed, and a few people actually use it.
And then every single DJ continues to use a laptop or two.
Right. And you sound like you could actually use it on Android, but will there be a market created to make it popular for the people who don't really need it is what it's going to take.
Here's an interesting one from Paul. Do any of you know if we will see the new USB port design soonish, possibly in the first half of next year?
I think they're still farther off than that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the phones that are going to be selling in the first half of next year are already being built.
Right.
Right. It's a thing where it's...
the second half of next year, maybe.
It's got to get... Yeah. It's got to get finalized as a design and then incorporated farther.
We can all agree the sooner those weird USB 3 designs that Samsung uses die.
Yeah. Which they didn't use on the Note 4 all of a sudden, so...
I wonder if the EU had anything to do with that.
Well, they were backwards compatible.
Yeah, but that sucked and it broke for a lot of people.
So, I don't think the EU had something to do with it just because they shipped us a USB 3 Galaxy S5 with a USB 2 cable. But the Galaxy S5. Yeah. Never going to let that go.
David asks, does Lollipop in the Nexus 9 under the settings, and this is true on, you know, Lollipop, under the settings security smart lock trusted devices have an option to add an SSID for your Wi-Fi network? Not currently.
No.
Bluetooth and NFC. That's one of the things we were stuck on, right? I couldn't get NFC to work properly here. I think I got bad tags. We decided.
Good thing you didn't implant that tag in your hand. That would have been.
Well, no, it's not just the tags, because my tags are good and it doesn't.
Okay.
So it's Phil's problem, is what you're saying.
Oh, no. That's not what he's saying.
No, there's something wonky there. It kind of works sometimes, maybe.
Yeah. So I'm not 100% sure what's going on with that, which is why I haven't written about that yet, because I was going to do it.
Yeah, that reminds me, how many people bought a Motorola Skip?
No, we don't know the release date for the Nexus 6 yet. Sorry. Still don't know that. Go Royals, says Josh. That's a hell of a seventh inning the other night. It was sixth inning. I forget which. Wow. If you didn't see it. Does anyone know about the timing of Nexus devices coming to the UK? Asked Paul.
Never.
Well, we didn't fight that war to just go ahead and send Nexus devices back over.
Look, you keep your tea and we're going to keep our Nexuses.
I would say, and I'm not sure how much I can say, but I would say be prepared to wait.
David, different David asks, SD cards on Lollipop, did Google change things from KitKat? Or are we still generically prevented, not sure why that's generic, from moving apps to the SD card, etc.? We haven't seen any changes yet, right,
Jared? Google's not going to, no. That it is what it is. If you don't want to accept Google's answer that it was done to enhance, you know, the usability for people who may be new to a smartphone, and for security reasons, don't accept it. But that those are the reasons. They are what they are. As it stands right now, they could release the next Nexus device with a security card or a SD card in it, and it would meet, you know, the requirements that Google said they want from external storage. A lot of developers aren't updating their apps, and some of the use cases that the power users have are just never going to happen anymore. And that's a can of worms. Man, I just can't wait till it goes away. Samsung, Sony, please stop making phones with SD cards so my inbox won't be so cluttered. Just
you can send your email to Jerry as a Google apologist at androidcentral.com.
No way.
He also already does.
It's using a crappy, poor, unsecure file system that even Microsoft got away from. The problem is a billion computers out there still have it, so your SD card has to use it. And if you want a phone with that file system available for applications to run amok, good for you. I don't. I'm glad Google's doing what they're doing.
Craig asked, is the Android Wear update we've had this week the Android Wear 2 update, or is that still to come?
I believe if he's talking about what I think he's talking about, that is the Android Wear 2.0 update, basically.
And again, remember, I mean, a lot of it, if you don't have GPS on the watch, you don't have GPS on the watch. So.
And, I mean, it really feels like this just building blocks for future things that are actually going to make sense when the apps on the phone side are updated, etc.
If you're not like us and you don't like wasting money, and waste isn't really the right word, but you know what I mean.
Investing money in things.
I like waste. Let's just use it. Let's roll with it.
What else? You guys are doing a fantastic job, and I love the site and the podcast. See, I'm not in a bad mood, says C. Brian Cantrell. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Sachin says, what do you think about Talon reaching the Twitter token limit?
That's still a thing.
Yeah, that's simple math.
Blame Twitter. Stop using their service if that bothers you that much.
I haven't tried it yet, but there's that new version specifically for Lollipop that's supposed to be beautiful.
If we could
still shows ads in your timeline.
No. Oh.
If we could get 1 billion Android users to say, "Hey, Twitter, we're not using your app anymore because of the way you treat our developers," Twitter would change that policy quick.
Jason says the GPS support on Android Wear, so you can offload some tunes to your watch, pair it with a Bluetooth headset, kick off Runkeeper, and go for a jog and leave your phone at home. That's why they added support. You're absolutely right. And
a watch will be dead before you get home.
Except for it doesn't work.
Sort of, yeah. I need to try again. I put some music. There's music sitting on this watch right now, and for whatever reason, it just wouldn't play in the one Bluetooth headset I had sitting here in the office.
Yeah, I couldn't get it to connect and play through any kind of Bluetooth headset either.
And it took forever to move the songs over. I mean, I know it's moving the data over Bluetooth, so it's going to be a little slow, but oh my God, it took forever. So
you could have gone to a store, bought a cradle for your phone to strap to your wrist, and then gone on your run and come back before it's...
I love the idea. I love the idea. Well, it's a really good idea.
And so do I, and we haven't seen the Sony yet to put it through any tests. Maybe they've hit on something, and the battery will be able to do that for a good 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours. But none of them so far could.
Here's a good question from James, and I don't even know that I'll be able to answer it, but I want to try. Hi, guys. Love the show and the website, especially the review, the phone reviews, but I wondered how much do you take into account the cost of the phone when doing the review and where you place it on any rankings that you may hold? Keep up the good work. I mean, we generally try to split things up into, like, here are the best affordable phones, you know, whatever that means. I don't know. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but whenever I'm reviewing the phone, I kind of don't think about the cost. On contract, everything's relatively the same on contract.
Well, and a lot of the high-end phones that we review are all pretty darn expensive. They're $600, $700. So until we have some kind of an outlier that's $300 or $400, you know, significantly less, it's not really worth, you know, making a huge point out of a difference in $50 MSRP on something.
The other side of it is you have phones like the Moto G and the Moto E, which the price is absolutely a big part of what those phones are. So.
But the price doesn't inherently make the phone better or worse.
Right. You always have to frame it right. I mean, especially the Moto G was a great example because it's really good for the price, but somebody who's willing to spend twice as much is going to get a much nicer phone. So it's got to be framed. You know, we don't know how much money each person that's reading the review is willing to spend on a phone. So it has to be framed the right way.
It's difficult for any of us to decide what is of value to you, I think, is what we're all getting at. We all have our own opinions we could inject in there, but if I actually would write the Nexus 6 review and I would say, hey, this is just like the old Nexuses, and this one's $200 cheaper than the 6 Plus, so it's a great value. You all would go crazy and say, Jerry, you're an absolute idiot. But that's what I think. So... I know personally I try to leave price out of the question, and maybe I shouldn't, but I do.
I think it's worth noting, and again, price changes, so if we put it in a review, it's going to be different at some point. But yeah, it's kind of a weird thing. I think it's absolutely something that needs to be mentioned at least, just so you're aware of where it fits in there.
But, you know, we've kind of pointed it out every once in a while, like you said, that the prices do change. I mean, you can say down on the road 7, 8, 9 months, you know, you can buy a Galaxy S5 for a couple hundred dollars less than you used to be able to buy it. And, you know, maybe that puts it in a different class when you compare, you know, do you buy the 6-month-old flagship or the new mid-range device? And then you can kind of have a discussion about price at that point. But, you know, these reviews are going to be up for a long time, so you can't really set so many things in stone.
Right. I say if it's a device you're going to use to better your life or to enjoy for a while, buy the most – God, how do you say – buy the most expensive
buy a little more. Yeah, buy a little more than you were planning on spending. That's how I've always looked at hard drives. No, all right, I don't really need a 2-terabyte hard drive, but I might. So I'm going to spend that little extra money just to future-proof it.
But the good news on this front that is undeniable is if, let's say, the Moto E or the new Moto G is what you can afford, you've got great options out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, smartphones range from the Moto E to the iPhone 6 Plus. You can spend $180 or you can spend $1,280. Get the most bang for your buck that you can afford when you get it.
Really, really good question. But with that, I'm going to stick a fork in it. We are done. Oh, wait, no, we're not. Damn it. I was close. We did get a couple emails that are worth. All right, one's on SD cards. I'm not sure if that was the same guy who asked in the Q&A.
He probably just emailed in to say you should fire Jerry.
No. It's a fair question asking if anything changed, I think.
It is. Right, it is. Because things are going to change, but they're going to change in a way that people don't like.
Yeah. Thomas writes, really great podcast last week. It felt shorter than it should have been. That's a compliment. No, I agree. It was a little quick because I was kind of getting out of town. Do you think the Nexus 9 LTE version will be able to do phone calls like the Sony Xperia Z3 Tablet Compact? What a name. No. For whatever reason, that's a North American thing. It's just not going to happen.
And it shouldn't be a thing anywhere. Jeez, people.
Yeah. Do you know the Wear Battery Stats app? No, I haven't loaded up these watches with a whole lot of apps just because I kind of don't want to for whatever reason. I'm just kind of weird like that.
Well, it's like I go to sleep at night and I put the G watch on the charger and it wasn't dead when I put it there. That's important.
And what to expect regarding CyanogenMod and Lollipop? They said they would wait for a final version before coding CM12, but come on, who are they kidding? I don't know. You had to ask them.
Well, I mean, how much work can they do without the code?
Yeah,
I mean,
and that depends on which phone you're talking about. There is more than one CM now.
But you will have to ask them regardless.
Right.
So,
right.
J-Man asks, just curious, in the Nexus TV, Nexus player will support Apple devices for casting. I come from a split household. I know you guys understand what it's like to find stuff working with platforms.
Yeah, it supports it Google
should.
Cast.
Yeah, it should have Google Cast.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be awesome? You can hook a Nexus player and an Apple TV up to the same television, use picture-in-picture to cast from one.
Ooh, whoa. Crazy.
That's got to be done.
I mean, unfortunately, the Google Cast situation on iOS isn't fantastic. There's not a lot of apps that support it, and the ones that do, it can be a little janky because it's not really built in the same way that it is on Android. But yeah, I mean, anything that can throw to a Chromecast now from iOS can throw to the Nexus player, which is good, a very good thing.
Kush, if you're listening, we really need some casting stuff for the Nexus player. Make it work with all the stuff.
I would be surprised if he didn't.
I hope he's just at work with steam coming off of his head.
All right, and with that, now I'm sticking a fork in it. Now I'm starting the disco music in the background. I don't like what people call it, porn music. I'm just saying. I mean, one of you guys can tell me if it is or not. So I've heard. What? Nobody?
There's not enough screaming or barnyard noises.
Stop.
Well, you asked. You asked for one of us to say something. Now you can edit that out.
If you want to email us, podcast@androidcentral.com, or just show up live and watch what happens. You can find us all on Twitter and Google Plus and all the places. Just search for our names. It's the easiest way to do it. We're on Instagram as well. We've been pumping stuff in there and having fun. Oh, these headphones are hurting. I gotta take them out. Wow. What else? I think that's it. We are also brought to you by shopandroid.com. Go buy all the things. Mama needs a new pair of shoes. Baby needs a new pair of shoes. Somebody needs shoes. I should get some shoes.
We are working on getting all the best Note 4 stuff in there, too.
Yes.
You need to mention that.
We have this one now.
Andrew's got stuff. Show it.
Wait. Now, there you go. Look at that. You can take Instagram-ready photos.
Whack
your SVU case.
Right.
It's actually kind of nice, but dang, $50.
Buy two, then.
Right, two for $100. It's a great deal.
We'll edit that out too.
All right, everybody in the Q&A. Everybody in the Q&A who we didn't get to your questions, I'm sorry. There's so many good ones. We try to answer as many as we can. Everybody listening live, thank you. Everybody watching live, you are awesome as well. That is it. We are out. Should be normal next week, I think. Nothing weird I can think of. I mean, we're just gonna be busy. But
Halloween, so it'll be spookier than usual.
Ooh, it is Halloween next week, isn't it?
Oh, man.
Wow. All right, well, we will see you on Halloween then. Jerry, Alex, Andrew, thank you. Everybody else, thank you. See ya.
Thank you, Phil.
See you later.
That outstanding Android Central podcast you just listened to was brought to you by Igloo Software. You can try Igloo free for up to 10 of your coworkers and create the company intranet that you've always dreamed of. Just go to igloosoftware.com/android.